weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Afric for the afternoon entertainment. It is Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Colley and John Fallon are standing by to chat football. We'll hear from FAI President Paul Cook with plenty of intrigue surrounding today's board meeting. We'll also hear from New Bohemians manager Alan Reynolds. We have a triple helping of Gaelic games today. Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray review and preview ladies football and Camogie League action. Well, Damien Lawler brings us up to date with the latest GAA's news headlines and new hurling committee, Meath's managerial departure. And on top of that, we'll hear from Kevin McStay ahead of Mayo's trip to New York. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to Game On here on 2FM. It is great to have your company. John Fallon and Nadine Doherty and Alan Colley are all standing by to chat. Nadine, we will be chatting ladies football a little bit later on in our triple helping of Gaelic games, but you're in a bit early. You're going to chat a bit of association football, so you are, Nadine.
Yes, we'll touch on that. Looking forward to getting the gossip of John first, though.
That's
FAI.
Exactly.
Still my best.
That is what we're here to provide with. Yeah. And Alan Colley will be providing some expert analysis. However, before I come to my expert panel, let us hear from Republic of Ireland manager John O'Shea, who was speaking on the Ray Darcy show. But before we hear from John, we can hear from FAI President Paul Cook, who was speaking to our own Dave Kelly earlier on today after that FAI board meeting.
Paul, I know there was a scheduled FAI board meeting today. There has been some speculation in terms of Jonathan's position. Can you tell us how the meeting went? The
meeting went very well. As you said, Dave, it was a scheduled meeting. It was supposed to be last night, but obviously we couldn't meet last night with an important game in the Aviva. So it was just scheduled where normal business of the board went on. One thing I will tell you, we got an update on the recruitment process for the men's team manager, and that's on train for an April announcement.
In terms of that announcement, obviously there's huge interest in that. Can you give us any indication as to the candidate at all?
All I will say, it will be April.
Will it be after the two upcoming women's European qualifiers?
It will. The timing is not certain at this moment in time, but it will be in April.
Will it be John O'Shea?
Again, what I will say to you, Dave, it will be revealed in April. There's a lot. We've narrowed the process well down.
Just in terms of that process and in terms of what the FAI were looking for, Is this contender still meeting all those criteria in terms of the green, you know, the green line and the various plans the association have for the?
We will be comfortable that the candidate will fit into our plan and processes going forward.
And just back to the CEO position, I know, you know, you can't say too much, but there has been speculation about Johnson's position. Can you tell us anything on that?
All I will say regarding today's board meeting, what I just said to you, it was a scheduled board meeting where we discussed various matters, and the one thing I will say, which will interest most football fans, is we're on schedule for an April announcement from the men's national team manager.
And will my final question, will that announcement mean that the new manager will start straight away, or the new head coach?
That the intention is that the manager will start as soon as possible.
Paul Cook, the president of the FAI, was doorstepped, and he was asked by Dave Kelly from RTE, were you going to get the job? And he answered, what do you think?
No idea, breaking news from me here. I don't know.
he refused to answer one way or the other, which to me, like, if they have somebody and they know since the February 28th that person is in place and they're going to announce it in April, well, then surely he would say no. John O'Shea is not getting the job. But the fact that he didn't say one way or the other suggests that it hasn't been confirmed one way or the other.
Well, look, all I can say is in terms of what we did the last couple of weeks, myself and the staff, and what we put together. And ultimately, the key for me was the buy-in from the players and how they went about it too. It was really good, and we really had a smashing time. And let's wait and see.
So Ray Darcy didn't have any breaking news for John O'Shea. John Fallon, soccer correspondent with the Irish Examiner, you have any breaking news for us? Or on a more serious note, what was the general feeling around this board meeting? Because as Paul kind of alluded there, it was scheduled. This wasn't a crisis meeting or an emergency meeting or a white smoke, the manager is here meeting.
No, it was routine in the sense that the FEI board do meet on the last Tuesday of the month, typically, but obviously that clashed with the match, so they had it this morning. But there was a number of items. I think it went on for nearly 4 hours, the meeting itself. So amongst those, as Paul Cook, the president, was keen to emphasise there, was the manager. But also, and it's a busy time for the FEI, the status of Jonathan Hill, you know, is also under scrutiny. Now, I'm not expecting anything immediate on that. We did speak on the evening of the Dáil PAC hearing about the fallout from that, and you asked me the question in terms of how tenable the job was, and I don't think there is any way back to for him.
Are you still in that belief?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think I don't think anything has really improved. I know there's been a few milestones with the sponsorship, finally, and we'll have a manager, you know, in the next probably 2 weeks or so. But it's more than just those things that are at stake. It's primarily that the FEI really need government support. They need trust from the government, you know, in terms of their facility strategy, which is 800 million over 15 years, of which over half of it is to come from the Exchequer. There's still certainly some mistrust there, and I think people around football feel that that's probably irreparable at this stage, given the performance, you know, over those two visits to Dáil Éireann. So I think that will probably take on a course maybe after the manager is announced. But it did warrant some discussion today.
Alan Cawley, reflecting on this block of friendlies, what differences, if any, did you see under John O'Shea's Ireland that perhaps was missing under Stephen Kenny's Ireland?
Evening, Shane and John. I'm just actually enjoying Ray Darcy's the detective qualities, to be honest with you, Shane. I'm trying to get the word out of John O'Shea. I was enjoying that. But yeah, in terms of the difference, I wasn't expecting a massive difference, because obviously John had come in under the remit of trying to look after the two games. I think he acquitted himself really, really well in terms of how he dealt with the on-the-pitch stuff. The performance against Belgium, I thought, was what we may have expected. Well organised, well disciplined, well structured the team. A lot of work had gone into obviously preparing them for that. That last night was fairly disappointing, you would say, in terms of trying to build on that Belgium result. But I thought Switzerland were just too good, particularly in that first half. Second half was a little bit better. I also thought, not just with the on-the-pitch stuff, I thought he handled everything off the pitch really well too. And John would have been up close and personal with him in terms of the media duties. I thought he acquitted himself really, really professionally and spoke very well throughout the window, if you like, Shane. But I wasn't expecting massive changes. Whether he'd be the man going forward, obviously it's all up in the air still. I'm on record as saying I see no reason as to why he shouldn't be in this case, because of, I suppose, the opposition in terms of who's the names that's been, I suppose, linked with the job. And because it's been never ending, and the one thing we know about football and football appointments over the years is that the longer the search goes on without a manager, the closer it is to John O'Shea nearly getting the job. So I suppose over the campaign, or over the two games, I thought he acquitted himself really, really well. It is up in the air at the moment. I'm not sure if Paul Cook let anything out of the bag there with a couple of his answers. One of his answers is that it'll be announced in April. Another one was that it would be reviewed in April. But like Ray Darcy said, if it wasn't going to be John, you'd rule him out at this stage. So I still think he's still in with a very, very good chance of maybe getting the job.
From your understanding, John, if John O'Shea was to become the permanent Ireland manager, would that mean that the agreement, the supposed agreement, or the heads of agreement that the FEI has with a potential other candidate fell through? So John O'Shea is the possible backup option?
Yes, if the big reveal was to be John O'Shea next month, something has gone amiss. That will not be by design. They will have stumbled into John O'Shea as being the next manager. Because my understanding, and I think this was sort of reaffirmed today, is that there is another individual that they have lined up as a full-time permanent manager. And as Alan said, John has been the model caretaker manager. He's said everything right. I think Saturday was particularly heartening to see the team. Okay, we didn't score a goal, but we missed a penalty. Okay, we came very close. Last night, not so. It's probably a bit more like the old Ireland, unfortunately. So on the football side of things, yeah, he has done well, but I still don't think that is going to deviate from, I won't say the original plan, but the latest plan that the FAI have to appoint a manager.
The longer this drags on, Alan, as someone who is involved in Irish football and who's also a fan, I suppose, of Irish football, Alan, how much is this deflating you as a supporter of football in Ireland?
Yeah, that's been the big problem, because it's turned into, I suppose, Stephen losing his job and us thinking that obviously some fresh manager will come in with fresh ideas and try and, I suppose, reassess what he has at his disposal and try and move us forward. But the longer it has gone on, it's turned into a major negative, I think, from the FAI's point of view, because it's how it's been handled. And I suppose the chase that ensued initially, and Lee Carsley was their supposed number one target. Well, if he ruled himself out as early as we're led to believe he ruled himself out, they should have come out and told us that. Why that chase went on as long as it did, if he was never really in the running to take the job, is beyond belief, really, for me, Shane. So, as John said there, if it turns out that there's someone that's ready to be appointed, and it sounds like it will be a backup plan now, and then if it turns out it's John O'Shea off the back of that backup plan failing as well, well, then I just think it leads to more negativity around the whole process, if you like. Now, I don't mind as long as it goes on once you get the right man, but the longer they go on where you're to-ing and fro-ing and you're jumping from one to the other, I don't think that's a good look for the FAI, and I don't think it has been a good look in terms of the process.
Nadine, if I bring you into the conversation as someone who mightn't be as heavily involved in association football, but as a sports fan, as someone who does have an interest in soccer, I think that's fair to say. What is your take on it? And in terms of even the ticket situation, that there's been a lot of negative press, and from someone kind of from the outside looking in, like, how do you see that?
Amateurish, in one word, and I feel that's just kind of been the FAI since January. I mean, Eileen Gleeson has become a welcome appointment, but again, you know, going back to that, we were fed storylines here, there and everywhere. There was a search on, and then I just felt with Eileen the minute, say that second result, she got that really good second result, it was always going to be her. And I think, and I hope in the long run, that will be a positive. With this scenario, yeah, just amateurish, Shane. Like, you just don't know what to believe. And then, you know, with the Jonathan Hill scenario, you kind of just, from an outside point of view, you're like, what has actually changed in the FAI in the last year? And it's very hard to see a whole pile. And frustrating. It's kind of embarrassing then as well on an international front, where this has gone on and on and on. And, you know, I don't follow soccer that closely internationally, but I doubt very much there's another association in the world that something like this has dragged on for so long. In terms of the ticketing, yeah, look, it's been highlighted with the men's side of thing this week with the geo ticket package, etc. A half empty stadium. We were saying 38,000 in the Aviva, not a hope. The women's game, I suppose it hasn't been highlighted enough, but it's the same situation, Shane. Like, I went off last week and I bought the duo package for the Sweden and the England game because at the time there was no option to buy single tickets. I'm not sure if I can make both games, but I went out and spent the money anyway. And the money, to be honest, it's good value. It's €45 for the two games. That's fine. But it meant that, you know, I was hoping to bring my girls' soccer team from my school to one of the matches. I couldn't do that. I've now bought the ticket. I can't go back and get rid of my two tickets. With the big change as well, you'll have people in the same situation as me who bought two tickets. They'll only use one, so you could have empty seats. And, you know, you look at that England game, that's probably going to be the biggest game, home game, for the Ireland women's soccer team in a long, long time. And it's such a missed opportunity initially to just go single ticket and sell the whole thing out straight away. Now, it probably will sell out now, but it's just such a big mix up. And there's, you know, there's soundings now that they will do individual tickets for Sweden, but it's just never straightforward, Shane. You know, that's, I suppose, and again, coming back to that word, amateurish, in one word.
On the flip side, it does seem that there may be single tickets for the women's fixtures as well. They did release tickets individually for the Switzerland match after the Belgium match. John, there has been a primary partner with Sky coming on board. Perhaps some might see that the drawn out process is that they're being very detailed in their search in terms of some positives that I suppose you could give the FAI and how they go forward. Was there anything else from the board meeting today, John, or it was kind of a case of probably it was just a scheduled annual meeting, the future Jonathan Hill, the men's senior manager, there wasn't any other sticking points or headlines that might come out now?
There's enough of those two that concealed a lot of the time, but
we're not expecting any more bombshells is
no
my question.
There's a sufficient it's plenty of things live at the moment. Like February was busy, March has been really busy, and you're sort of expecting things to calm down a bit after the England game on the 9th, but it probably won't, you know, because there's other things going on. But just going back to Nadine's point, I think she's bang on. I think the FAI policy of doing the duo ticket is fine if you have, you know, a powerhouse coming into town like France, but to do it for two friendlies on the men's, I think it really backfired. You could see by the two attendances. They've probably learned their lesson now by tweaking things for the women's matches, because you should be allowed to go to any game you want, you know, and pay whatever, you know, set the prices what they are, and people, market forces will dictate.
Yeah. Final word to you, Alan Colley. Is there hope that we will all be enthused come April when this announcement is made, and that we will be seeing Irish football in a positive light?
Depends on who it is, Shane, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then we decide the after that. And I wouldn't, as I say, because of the only reason I've been kind of publicly backing John O'Shea over the past probably 3 or 4 weeks is because of the names that's been linked to it. And because John's been so closely involved for such a long time, obviously he has a good relationship with the players. You only have to listen to some of the players' interviews afterwards. Now, I know all players will speak of whoever the manager is at the time in glowing terms, but certainly they've built up some sort of a relationship with John, I suppose, not just over these two games, but also the fact that he was on the backroom team with Stephen Kenny. And he's a legendary figure for that generation of players. Like, when you look at what he achieved, now that doesn't guarantee a success as a manager, and he's obviously going to be very, very fresh and new to that if he was given the job. But because of the other managers that I'm hearing that are being linked with it, I see no reason as to why you shouldn't give John O'Shea and the backroom team that he's assembled as well. I think he's brought in a really good backroom team. Paddy McCarthy, learning off one of the best managers at Crystal Palace with Roy Hodgson, gained a lot of coaching experience. Glenn Whelan starting off. And of course, Brian back involved as well, which was fantastic to see. So because of that team that's been assembled right now, I'd let them get on with it.
Well, we shall see. Brian Kerr's out of contract, John, interim manager. Who knows? He could be the permanent manager then. Yeah. Green are back in football.
The sequel, yeah, all the way on from 2005, yeah. But just on that, I think, you know, how much patience can you give? But whenever this unveiling happens, I'm sure the FAI would say that the end justifies the means. So okay. let's see if that stacks up.
We shall wait and see. Alan Colley, John Fallon, thank you both very much. Nadine, you're sticking around. Before we take a break, we can hear from new Bohemian Football Club manager Alan Reynolds, unveiled today at Dalymount Park, and he was speaking to our own Andrew O'Connor.
Alan, congratulations on your appointment. You must be very excited to start at such a big club.
Yeah, I look really excited because, as you say, it's a massive, massive club. I know it's a massive challenge. As I said earlier, the time seems to be right for me to. I feel it's right for this challenge at my stage in my career. I'm really excited about it. I know I'm under no illusion. There's a lot of hard work ahead, and I'm ready for that.
It was day one today when you got to meet the players on the field, and you seem very positive after that first big session.
Yeah, but come here, not a lot is going to change between this and Friday, but I knew some of the lads that were there from various clubs I've been with. Good lads, good energy about the session, took on the information, and you know, we obviously have a, you know, massive game on Friday which we're looking forward to, so that probably helped. And the new manager coming in with new, I suppose, demands and expectations, so it's all good.
It's a big club, obviously lots of history, lots of fans with big expectations, and you seem to be embracing that sort of wholeheartedly.
Yeah, look, come here, as I said, coming here, the fans are exceptional. They're like, you know, I suppose when they're on your side or get behind you, or sorry, if you're on the other side of it, that you come here as an away one, it's real intimidating, and the passion, you can feel it on the pitch, and I love that. I love that edge, really. There's an edge in Dalymount, and long may that last, and we need that, get behind the team. Obviously, not to cross the line, none of that, but just to have that edge.
Obviously, your relationship with Pat Fenlon, both as a player and in management, has been very important to bringing you here. Can you speak about Pat and his influence on you personally?
Yeah, Pat's been really good. You know, firstly, I played under him. Then, obviously, played against him, actually, when a player, but was the director of football at Waterford, and was really good. Real demanding. He's a winner. and he will be doing everything he can to make sure this is successful in everything, whether I'm here or anyone's here. He's driven, really hungry, and I like that.
You have a very busy start, 3 games in just a couple of days, and the biggest game of probably Bow's season, or one of the biggest games of Bow's season, is going to be your first obstacle. That is Shamrock Rovers in Talla. What a way to start.
Yeah, look, a great game. Great game. Anytime you go to Talla, or anytime you play Rovers, is a great game. We're really looking forward to it. I suppose there's no motivation needed. You know, and again, there won't be loads of change from last when we played Derry a couple of weeks ago, because I'm only in the door. But we really look forward to it, and the players can't wait.
Game on. GAA.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Damien Lawler is on the line to chat Gaelic games with all the latest news stories. But before we chat to Damien, Damien himself was speaking to Mayo manager Kevin McStay ahead of their trip to New York in the Connacht Football Championship.
Kevin, how are you? Championship looms. The time goes very quickly, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does. The league is wrapped up now and focused now totally on New York. So there's kind of two aspects to it, Damien. There's the logistical side, obviously, and then there's the football side. And so logistically and administratively, we're in great shape. Great planning for the last 2 or 3 months. And we got a really good brief last week, so we know what we're doing. And now the football focus starts now on New York. And obviously everything we've done in the league, we're hoping we'll bring that and more into the championship.
Yeah, the league, like, there's lots of good things in the league, Kevin. And what are the positives you're taking out of that?
Oh, well, I mean, that we kept our Division 1 status, obviously. That was a key objective, and did it with 2 games to spare. So that was very satisfactory. Built out the panel. You know, we used a lot of players in the league. We've quite a young panel, and trying to just get them through, a demanding pre-season, Damien, and then into the rhythm of week-on-week league matches. And, you know, that week, you know, early in the week, reviewing what you did, and then later previewing what's ahead of you, and getting all the players used to that rhythm, especially the younger lads. That worked very well. So overall, you know, and then we're trying out loads of other things, like every other team. And, you know, different weeks you have different focus, depending on the opposition and depending where you see things longer strategically in the summer. So, yeah, no, we were very, very satisfactory League 24 for us, and we drive on now into the Championship.
So that was Mayo manager Kevin McStay speaking to Damien Lawler, who is on the line. Damien, will Mayo be relishing the trip to New York, or is this just an inconvenience that they could do without?
They won't be nervous about it, but like anytime you're on the playing back with a win, is a good time. And you've seen in recent years, particularly maybe with the lower tier kind of counties going over, that's a scare at bedtime, as the fella says, on a Sunday evening, you know, for the start of the championship. And I was chatting to Dermot O'Connor and Kevin McStay today, and you know, I was just asking him, like, is it a case of getting over there, just getting the win and coming back? And he just said, look, it's not like any other championship game, Dermot said, and he's right. There's a lot going into it. You have a different pitch. You have a lot of travelling. I suppose from a county board point of view, there's a kind of GAA grant, but it's an expensive trip as well. It's a long start to the championship. It comes very, very soon after the league. But look, it's one of these boxes that has to be ticked. And they are getting bodies back. You know, the likes of Pádraig O'Hara is back. And I think that after last year winning the league title, then bowing out in the first round of the championship, they've learned a lot from that. So they have 8 points in this year's league. They probably could have got another point against Kerry. That would have been 9. Could have had a different result up in Omagh. And that could have really brought them back to a league final, which would have meant going straight out to New York on the back of that. And that's no good for anybody. So as it is, they have a weekend to get ready for New York, to come back then, and they expect to get a win out there. But nervous would be the word I'd use, Shane. They want to try and put that game to bed as early as they possibly can, really, because otherwise, if you let New York have any momentum about them at all, we've seen them bring other teams, albeit maybe lower division teams, into extra time and even clinch a win, you know. So I'd say they'd like to get out of there with the win.
They most certainly will. So Mayo are on the road to New York. Leitrim will have home advantage for their Connacht quarterfinal against Sligo. It was meant to be played in the Hyde, but it is going to be played in Park. Sean McDermott and London Galway is the other quarterfinal in Connacht. And that is the weekend of the 6th and 7th of April. However, turning to hurling, Damien, the Mead senior hurlers are on the lookout for a new manager after Saoirse Bulfin confirmed to the county board that he would be stepping down from the post due to personal and family commitments, I should say.
Yeah.
His departure comes just 3 weeks before the Royal County begin their Joe McDonagh Cup campaign against Down. Was this shock news, and how big of a blow is it to Meath?
Yeah, like it's very, very close to the championship. Like, I mean, the Joe McDonagh Cup is only around the corner, and so in fairness, Saoirse had been there 2.5 years as manager. Before that he'd been there working under Nick Weir as a selector. And I think that, you know, when he took over initially, there was great success. They got promotion from Division 2B. They won the Christy Ring Cup. Bit of a buzz around Meath underage hurling as well. Not this time, relegation from the league, from 2A. And I suppose the Saoirse stepping down is, you know, it has caught people by surprise. Certainly outsiders anyway, for sure. You know, it was a big appointment at the time back in 2022, I think, Shane. You know, Saoirse Bulfin has probably been around mainstream coaching for the last 20 years, I'd argue now at this stage. He's been a right-hand man of Davy Fitz in a few positions. And this one with Meath was his first kind of inter-county management job on his own. He'd been working with the likes of Waterford, Wexford and Clare with Davy Fitz before. And I think that he got a good kind of a hurling pedigree to bring with him. So certainly it's a crunch time for all these hurling counties, Shane. That, as I've mentioned on your show in the past, a lot of these counties are in vulnerable enough positions when it comes to hurling. Now, I'm not mentioning Meath specifically, but you know, other counties, like during the week we saw Kildare beat Leash and the Miners, and that's a fine result for Kildare hurling. And you would say to yourself then, what is being done to promote Kildare hurling and bring it to the next level? Was enough done to promote Meath hurling and bring it to the next level? And my argument here is, you know, there have been plans unveiled to drive hurling forward. Before Larry McCarthy stepped down, he unveiled a hurling committee to drive hurling forward. A big buzzword at the moment is creating new clubs and keeping them sustained. I think my fear is that those clubs will be created in football heartlands, and they'll only play maybe when football is not on. Mm. I'd be much more focused at the moment from a strategic point of view in taking places like Meath, Westmeath, Carlow, Kildare, even Leash, areas up in Belfast, Carlow Town, Down, places that are serious about bringing hurling to the next level. Places that have demonstrated that with a bit of support they can achieve things. And now let's see with the next rung of support what they can actually manage to achieve. Because I do believe that the people there are in the places I've mentioned are sincere and passionate about it, but they need strategic placing in terms of resourcing and funding. So, like, I've been hearing a lot about Meath hurling for the last few years in terms of underage development, but that needs to be a constant project for 10 years. It needs constant backing. So Saoirse probably experienced a disappointing league step down, and you know, it's not a good sign for the county on the eve of a Joe McDonagh Cup campaign, which is outrageously, ridiculously one of the most competitive competitions in the GEA, and it goes completely under the radar often as well.
Mm. Everything you've said there then, that brings me on to the new Hurling Development Committee under GA President Jarlath Burns. I see Brian Cody is one of the big names on this committee. Is all of that you're explaining there going to be under their remit now? Or like, who else is on this committee, and what is it actually aiming to achieve?
So the committee is called Tomont. You know, I suppose an Irish play on the words drive and hurling. And I think Jarlath Burns, from a long way out, has been meeting with hurling people. You know, Jarlath's son-in-law is an inter-county hurler, D. O'Keefe from Wexford. So he'd know full well the challenges and the joys that are there of inter-county hurling. And I would feel that a lot of people have been talking to Jarlath about hurling and about the challenges and about the landscape in the recent past. So Jarlath's taken one point of view for sure, and that's to bring in some marquee names. But he's also brought in names of guys, you know, spread around the country who have experience in setting up and establishing new clubs and new, you know, new institutions. So he's keen to drive hurling clubs in areas like his own up in Armagh. He's keen to drive the growth of hurling clubs from Dublin north of the border all the way up. So you can't fault that initiative. You can't fault that enthusiasm. I would argue, though, that that nearly every tier of hurling should be treated on a different basis. You know, the counties I mentioned previously, your Kildares and your Meads and your Carlows, like, they have been absolutely fourth gear trying to get hurling going and keeping hurling going in their counties. And I think that they need tailored support. I'm yet to be convinced that the growth of new hurling clubs can be sustained long-term, or that at some stage over a 3 or 4 year period, it won't fall foul to the competition that, that football provides. But in the areas I've listed out, maybe the 10 or so areas, hurling is alive and well. It could improve even more so. You could get more playing numbers devoted to it. Counties are doing all that they can to try and prosper. Carlow play junior hurling, club hurling, Kilkenny. In Kildare, they play from in Naismith from 13 to 17 in Kilkenny. They play from under 9s to under 12s up in Dublin. They're constantly going out trying to improve themselves. So I think you have to pay attention to these people too and say, right, you're actually up the ladder in terms of making progress. You have a chance of doing something here, and let's back them fully. And then also maybe try and get a pilot project going to get more clubs created. But then again, he has good people like Willie Maher on board, Brendan Cummins is on board, and all these people know what it's like to be in a strong county, but in Willie's case, getting hurling going in the likes of Leash after a couple of maybe, well, they had good times with Cheddar as well, but, you know, they've had challenges in hurling there for the last 10 years too. So I suppose what I'm trying to say to you, Shane, is I admire what Jarlath's trying to do. He's admitted it's not going to be a short-term plan. It could be maybe a 10-year plan. And in the meantime, I don't think you can afford to let those second, third tier counties slip away.
Well, a long road ahead, but some big names on that hurling committee. For now, we will leave it there, Damien Lawler. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we chat ladies football in the company of Nadine Doherty. And Nadine, it is not often that you are lost for words. However, when we were flicking through the schedules and the fixtures, the league finals are set for 2 weeks' time. No fixtures over the Easter period. However, Galway are playing Waterford in what is now a relegation playoff. And the game is on at 2 p.m. on Sunday, April 7th in Pearse Stadium. The Division 2 final between Kildare and Tyrone is at 1 p.m. And the Division 1 final between Armagh and Kerry is at 3 p.m. So it's a bit of a blemish on the LGFA's record, putting on a big match in tandem with finals elsewhere.
Yeah, I really have no words, Shane. Like, I'm sure in the background somebody will say there's a reason for it, and pitches and fixtures and so on. But surely a pitch could have been got on Saturday or something to play this game. Like, you know,
because it's not a nutting fixture.
It's a massive fixture. Yeah. It's really massive. And I mean, if Galway lose that game, you're looking at Galway and Cork, two teams, you know, who've been at the top tier for so long. Galway possibly been relegated. It'll also be a really good game of football, Shane, I'd say, because there is so much on the line. So, I mean, if you're watching Kildare and Tyrone, that's at 1. And if you want to watch the Galway game, then you're going to miss the second half of the Tyrone game, and you're probably going to miss some of the first half of the Armagh-Kerry game. So, I don't know. I just don't know how it can't do anything good for the promotion of the game. I'm...
Not ideal.
Not ideal.
A day for the iPad.
Yeah. It's just really disappointing.
Well, that is set for, as we say, a couple of weeks' time. But it is disappointing, Nadine, and we will be previewing all those matches in detail. However, speaking of Galway, they were defeated at the weekend in Fitzgerald Stadium. So at least one upside, it's in Pearse Stadium, Galway-Waterford. Fitzgerald Stadium hosted Kerry-Galway. So Kerry 2-11, Galway 12 points. Kerry getting the job done, really, and getting into a league final against Armagh.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke last week and I said that Galway had a chance to beat Kerry, and they had chances, Shane. It was a funny game, to be honest. It was kind of strange. I was watching it thinking, there's no bite to this game. You know, especially say in the first half, you wouldn't have thought that Kerry had to win to make a league final and Galway had to win to stay up. It kind of ebbed and flowed, and I think the difference between the teams really was Kerry's ability to be clinical when they were on top, whereas Galway had long spells of possession, long spells of control in the game. And I've mentioned her name a few times already this year. Nicola Ward was phenomenal again, really driving everything on. But Galway just weren't able to take those goal chances that would have got them over the line. And in fairness to Kerry, you know, they've really, I feel they've improved even more this year in terms of being clinical. And what I really like about them, Shane, I said last week, their squad is growing. It's really growing, and there's different leaders stepping up. They've huge options now all over the pitch. They were impressive. They got the job done. And one thing actually that stood out, and it's standing out, and I think they'll adapt the same tactic in Croke Park, that tactic of smothering the player on the ball. I suppose it came to the fore with the Tyrone men's team about 20 years ago. It's illegal in ladies football. You can't do that. But they're doing it to great effect. They're winning possession. Teams are being caught for over-carrying. But, you know, in the ladies' game, dispossession is you got to tap the ball away from the solo. So they're adopting that tactic. They're just getting a bit more clever. And they need that. And I think they're very, very well positioned now for this final. But yeah, look, job done against Galway. As I said, it wasn't one for the memory books. And Galway will be disappointed, because I really felt, you know, they had opportunities there that they could really have just, this Waterford game wouldn't have mattered. Had they won that game at the weekend, it wouldn't have mattered. And now they find themselves in one last game to try and avoid that relegation.
Job done for Kerry. So it didn't matter what Dublin did against Armagh. Kerry were into the final. However, Dublin didn't know that at the time on Saturday, and they went out and they demolished Armagh, albeit a couple of changes to the Armagh team, it has to be said, but 7-10 to 1-4.
Yeah, and do you know what, Shane? I think it's going to matter in the long run. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, I do. I think Dublin have done this in the past. You know, when a team challenges, like Armagh are, and they're top of the table, Dublin always have this wonderful capacity to just let teams know who's the boss, and they did that, and absolutely granted, you know, Armagh made several changes, you know, the most notable Amy Mack and Carolyn O'Hanlon, Aoife McCoy, probably their three main players, they were rested. But, you know, Gregor McGonigal, their coach, spoke at halftime and he said, you know, not our usual starting 15, which I suppose would speak volumes to me in that Armagh's panel compared to Dublin and Kerry, it's so much smaller, Shane, yeah. Because if Dublin made those changes, let's say, for example, Amy McInright, your Carla Rowe is almost your equivalent in Dublin. Carla Rowe's been missing from the Dublin team for the last three or four matches. She only came back there the last 2 weeks. Dublin still are able to play that game. There's that template that they have of work hard and move the ball fast. Whereas with Armagh making those changes, it was such a demolition. Yeah. I mean, it was 3-3 to no score, I think, after 10 minutes. And the first time Armagh crossed the Dublin 45, the game was over. And that just, I feel, even if Dublin made seven changes, Shane, that would not happen. And I know it's the league and so on, but that's a massive statement. And I think for Armagh, it's not really a great result going into a league final. You know, it's still at the back of your head, you know, 7-10 to 1-4, that's huge. I know people got game time, but for what reason are those 8 or 9 or 10 players, I mean, he made a huge number of substitutions, are those players realistically going to feature later on in the championship? And in my opinion, they're not.
Yeah.
You know, they're not. So a huge result, and I think in the long run it is going to speak volumes.
Yeah, I don't know how much you learn from a defeat by six goals and 6 points, I think, is the difference in the end. For Mayo, 2-9 to 2-6, fair to say, probably an unconvincing performance for Mayo, yet they got the job done.
Yeah, and I was hard on them last week, Shane, and I watched them again this week, and it was unconvincing, but there was an improvement for sure. You know, it was similar enough to last week, whereby they went for long spells with possession and they didn't score. It was a weird first half as well, more than the Kerry-Galway game. It started off, Mayo conceded a goal after 40 seconds from a really sloppy quick free. Then they went down the pitch, scored a goal of their own, and then nothing really happened for 20 minutes aside from Mayo dominating possession, failing to break down a well-organised Waterford backline. Then Waterford went up in the last 5 minutes, the first half, scored 2-2. Mayo went straight back down the field and scored 1-2. And then the second half, Mayo just had that little bit extra. But again, Shane, it was their composure and so on. But they do look, they've young new players. Fiona McHale came on with about 10 minutes to go, really steadied the ship at times. But with Mayo, I feel when they're up against more superior opposition in the championship, they're going to have to take those scores, Shane. They're going to have to close games out, and they shouldn't be left in a situation whereby with 5 minutes left to go in a match that they've dominated possession for 70%, that they're under pressure. Fabulous young footballers coming through, you know, Saoirse Delaney, Fionnuala McLaughlin was really impressive in the forward line. She scored 1-1, I think. She's only about 18-19. Sinead Walsh, Hannah Reap, and Aoife Geraghty in midfield. There's exciting young players there with Mayo, and I think Liam McHale is on the right track. They just need to to bring it together and get more concrete performances and more consistent, essentially.
Elsewhere, unfortunately, we have run out of road, but Meath 2-14, Cork 1-7, Cork relegated to Division 2 for the first time since 2003, which is just... it's astounding, really. Yeah. We will be chatting about that with Championship fast approaching as well, and we will be previewing the league finals in due course. But Nadine, I do apologise, but thanks so much.
No,
apologies to Meath and Cork listeners, but we will be getting stuck into all the counties very soon. Stick with us. Speaking of Cork, we're going to hear from Aoife Murray and Shaq Camogie.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, Aoife Murray joins us to chat Camogie because it was a bumper weekend of action last week in Division 1A, and there's lots on the line this week as well, heading into the final round. Aoife, I'm going to start by referencing the dramatic end between Galway and Waterford. Waterford leading by a point heading into extra time. I think it was the 7th and the 9th minute of extra time that Galway got two late points to win by 13 points to 12. Waterford started the weekend top of the table. They're now in 4th. Galway are top. There's not much separating these sides, but what a finish to that one.
Yeah, I think the classic unbelievables of, you know, it's a game of two halves. I think this was nearly a game of three halves, Shane, with the amount of injury time that was there. But look, do you know what? I think actually if you look at how the game went, it was probably a game that best represents how the league has gone in a whole, in the sense of all teams have had their ups and downs, battles, last minute points, etc., and the tightness and the swings from Waterford almost winning it to Galway pipping it. I think it probably really reflects just what a positive league, I suppose, for maybe people like myself who's watching from afar. I think it also represents just how tight that table is, which I know we'll chat to in a minute. Mm. But certainly, you know, if you're Waterford, you're walking away going, Jesus, we're now down to 4th, I think, in the table. You know, leading, coming into the major chunk of injury time, you go, you would probably feel fairly deflated after that victory, after that loss, apologies. But I think if you're Jerry Wallace, you'd have to take a huge amount of positives out of it. One, they got themselves into positions. Okay, they did not take a lot of their scores, but they've got, you know, they'll have 2 months potentially after this weekend where they can really start to maybe work on those areas. I think Jerry's will walk away from this league with a huge amount of positive. In fairness to them, they're up against Galway, which has historically been one of the top three, and they really brought the game to them. They didn't, you know, just die. They came back, they kept on fighting, and they did fight right to the very end. So I think I would say if you're Waterford, I know you'd be really disappointed not having won that game, but, you know, I really hope they take a huge amount of positives because there definitely was. But then again, if you're Cathal Murray, you're looking at it and going, we never died, we never stopped. And, you know, to play right to the end, I think, which the league has oddly been a bit of a mixed bag for Galway, Shane, but yet they're going into the weekend where, you know, a draw or a win, they're in the final.
Yeah, Galway host Cork and Ballinasloe this weekend. Interestingly, Cathal Murray was able to include former Down star Niamh Mallon on a first appearance for another ex-player of the year, Niamh Kilkenny, who sat out 2023. So good news for Galway in that regard. Good news for Tipperary as well, because they're on the brink of a first appearance in a senior national camogie decider since 2009. So Galway and Cork, obviously, also in contention as Division 1A of the very camogie leagues enters its final round of group games next week. Tipperary overcame near neighbours Kilkenny 2-12 to 1-6. So uncharted territory in the recent past for Tip.
Yeah, do you know what? I read that piece about 2009. I actually couldn't believe it. And certainly maybe over Tip's form over the last couple of years, probably to me, it's not a surprise where they are, where they're now putting themselves into that kind of, I suppose, pole position with regard to being in that league final. Equally, you know, double scores against Kilkenny. And I go back to the comment about Galway, you know, Kilkenny, Galway, Cork, I think, Shane, I don't know how many times we were praying for someone to come in and mix that top three up. I think how Tip have gone about their business. Let's remember that first day out, really poor showing, and you're going, geez, you know, they showed such great progression over the last 2-3 years. But they really picked that up, and to beat Kilkenny by double scores, like, that's a huge win for Tipperary, and certainly justifying their position going into that last game of the league. Equally, you know, Kilkenny got a really good period where they were on top, but Kilkenny just never panicked, kept going about their business, and that's what I really liked about them. You know, you'd say Kilkenny are going, I think they scored 4 points, only scored 4 points in the second half. For Tipperary to hold Kilkenny at that, look, I think it just truly reflects where Tipperary are going. They're very much on the up, and I would say they're going to be a real hard team to beat in that final.
Yeah, and I suppose that makes it even more impressive that it was in Kilkenny as well, a big win for Tipperary. Cork and Clare, so good news for Cork, but it's this torrid league campaign for Clare continues.
Yeah, and God, like, it's hard not to be negative on a chain, right? And I will do my best to be positive about it, because in fairness, they are a young team. I think we chatted, was it last week, about, you know, what happens when they have to drop down a grade. And look, I suppose I'm trying to be as positive as I can. They're a young team. They're trying to rebuild. You know, any time I would have ever played Clare, like, they're so hard. They're so hard to beat. But what I could see at the weekend was there was a bit of fight in them. And they really did make it really difficult for Cork in that first half. You know, they did make it hard. Now, I think Cork, actually, oddly, playing into the elements, really found their groove. But I genuinely thought at least there was some green shoots for Clare. It's going to be a hard one going into this weekend. They will probably be relegated. But I really hope they can take a couple of positives out of the league, for especially for the younger players, so that they can start to rebuild, you know. Certainly as a Camogie supporter, I always compare there or thereabouts in the Munster Championship, because they do make games really hard for their opposition. But yeah, it is really a tough one. But, you know, Cork, Katrina Mackey back on the pitch, getting Saoirse McCarthy back on, and probably the biggest one, I think, for Cork is getting Laura Tracy back in. She just completely shores up that defence, and I think there's been a one or two creaks over the league in that particular area. So, like, that is a huge thing for Cork, especially going into this weekend, Shane.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, Tipperary on the brink of a potential final, on the assumption that they would come away from Ennis this weekend with a victory over Clare. So that means Galway, Cork and Ballinasloe, that's going to be a cracker this weekend, Aoife.
It absolutely is. It is, and I've been this game keeps popping into my head all day because I've constantly flip-flopped all day with who I think would come out of that with a victory. In fairness, you're looking at Galway, it's at home. They're really hard to beat at home. As you said, they now need Mallon, who's available for them. And the big one for me, Niamh Kilkenny coming back. Look, absolutely one of the best Camogie players, one of the nicest Camogie players, I think, to watch. So Galway getting her back, because I do think, even though Galway are putting themselves back into contention for a three in a row in the league, they've had ups and downs through the championship or through the league. I know Colin Murray has tried a number of players, probably hasn't got it to click as of yet, but getting the likes of Niamh Kilkenny back into that centre field, like, 9 times out of 10, Aoife Donoghue's going to have a great game. But bring back in Niamh Kilkenny, I think it's 10 out of 10 chance Aoife Donoghue's going to have a super game. That's just what Niamh brings to Galway. You go to Cork on the other side, Laura Tracy getting back in, that's going to completely stabilise that defence. One thing is Saoirse McCartan coming off with an injury. That'll be a close eye, kept on that. But Saoirse McCarthy coming in. So there's so many positives for both sides. Shane, it's so hard to call it, but if you have to look at Galway, it's at home, a win and a draw, either or, they're true. So even a draw is not going to do it for Cork this weekend. So you would nearly be tipping on the side of a Galway result there.
It's good to have that jeopardy, so as to add to the occasion. Final one for you, Aoife, Waterford-Kilkenny. Like, I mean, last year's All-Ireland finalists, Waterford-Kilkenny, a traditional powerhouse. These are two sides that will want to end their league campaign on a high.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think if you look at maybe who's had the better league campaign, I think you'd have to go to Waterford. I think probably Gerry Wallace has found out a huge amount about that team, especially coming off of such a beating in the final last year, Shane. You know, for him to be able to pick them back up, they look extremely positive. Mentally, they look quite tough. I think even the fitness-wise, you can see that all coming. So, you know, for him going into this weekend, you would have to say a victory would set them up really well for the championship, because both of those teams, like it's going to be 2 months, Shane, before they get back out to championship again. I know you're going to have your provincials in between, but it's a long wait. It's a long wait. So you really need to be going in, taking a huge amount of positives out of that. I think Kilkenny, look, they're in transition. I think they're trying to build. They're trying to build. But for me, I think Waterford have really shown that, you know, they've taken so many positives and learnings out of last year's run.
We will be reviewing all of that next Wednesday with yourself, Aoife. But for now, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Camogie.
That is all we have time for here on Game On. The new music show with Beto Da Silva is up next. Thank you for listening. We'll be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow. But first, we're going to check in now with the news desk.